You're listening to Around Comics, a special edition book club episode spotlighting Charles Burns' Black Hole. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. Hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Niesman, alongside Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. There's all these microphones, but it's just you and me.
But they're all unplugged except for these two.
These two are the only two plugged in?
They're the only two plugged in.
Oh, that's finally.
If you're
all right, here's what I think about Robert Kirkman.
No, stop.
Oh, okay,
stop.
Sorry.
If you are a first-time listener to Around Comics, you should know that this is not one of our regular episodes. Each Monday, we have a roundtable discussion group, but this episode is spotlighting our book club selection, Charles Burns' Black Hole.
Blackest Hole.
It is the blackest
hole. You fell into a black hole.
We've been talking about this book for about 2 years now. It was, I think, originally Phil Hester had suggested this in an interview.
Episode 10 or 11.
And it's been well over 2 years. And we've been teasing this, you know, ever since then.
Yep.
And so we finally have made it a book club selection, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So if you have not read Black Hole, we're obviously going to be talking about the book in depth. And if you haven't bought Black Hole yet,
it's too late.
It's never too late. Don't bother.
Listen to us and you'll find out everything that happens.
You should know that Black Hole is still available at instocktrades.com.
But hurry.
Yes, they're selling out.
Mine's
fast.
Going on eBay for $50.
InStockTrades.com is your source for all things collected, from deluxe hardcovers, trade paperbacks, showcases, essentials, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And you can pick Black Hole up there for a great discounted price. Remember that all orders are $50. Do, in fact, ship for free. And stick around to the end of the episode to find out what our new book club selection is. But right now, we're going to dive into the blackest of holes. So,
you fall into a black hole.
Tom?
Yes?
I don't know if we need to even give, quote-unquote, a recap or the Hollywood pitch of Black Hole. It's kind of a hard book to say, this is what it's about.
It's about teenage angst, Chris. It's about angst in the 70s and kids and... You have these kids sort of living in a suburban environment. There's a sexually communicated disease going around that makes people deformed, and it makes some of the kids separate themselves out from. And the dog's barking.
Sanchez is here.
The dog's barking, and some of the kids separate themselves out, and it becomes sort of a horror story involving, you know, what's happening to all these deformed kids. Some of them getting murdered, and some are falling in love. It becomes less about the deforming disease and more just about, you know, being young and trying to fit in the world.
You did it. There you go. Okay.
That's a wrap. Hollywood pitch. Done.
That's a wrap. All right.
Show
Come
over.
Back next. No.
Yeah.
No, that is exactly what the premise of the book is about. It is, I think, described by a lot of people as being, probably not accurately, as being a horror book. And after rereading it again, I don't know if you had to peg me down and say, where would you categorize this? I don't know if I would say this is a horror genre book.
I don't think you're supposed to be scared, really. I mean, I don't think at the end you're supposed to be like, oh, this is... horrifying. You know, horrible things happen.
Oh, and there are certain horror aspects to it with this mutating communicable disease.
Yeah.
And there are certainly moments in it that you're like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. It's creepy. Like a lot of vagina imagery. If you're scared of vaginas.
Yes, I think someone on our forum described it as the big scary vagina book.
There's also penises in the book. There's nudity, by the way, if you're reading this on the train and all of a sudden you open to an as I keep opening the page with a man's exposed genitalia and you're on the train and you look around and you're like, did anyone just see me looking at this black and white?
I'm not a dirty old man.
I'm not a dirty old man. It's literature.
But
if I was reading about a penis, no one would care. But because I'm looking at a picture, drawn picture of one, now I'm a weirdo. Yeah.
A lot of people like to do their own like mashup descriptions of movies or books or whatnot.
I feel like you're about to.
Here's my kooky little mashup.
Do it.
This is Dazed and Confused meets The Hills Have Eyes.
That's a good mashup. That's good. Yeah. I like it. I feel like I'm going to say it's like 90210 meets... I'm trying to think about like the most famous movie involving communicable diseases. Yeah, aren't that many, so I guess I'll have to wait a few years, and then I'll have a better one.
And the band played on.
And the band played on, yeah. Oh, God, that's not a good...
That's not a good
mashup. No one wants to read that.
No, it definitely has a Dazed and Confused feel to it, because this is 1970s suburban Seattle, and it's all high school kids that are coming out of the sexual revolution drug culture of the late 70s. And so it definitely has...
Late 60s.
It's
70s, but they're coming out of the sexual thing of the 60s.
Yeah, exactly. So
I just want to get our history straight. Continuity is important to me, Chris.
I know it is. But
real
no, it is that 70s era where, you know, it was a lot of free love, which is still 60s, I know, but people were sexually promiscuous and maybe not the safest whenever they were having sex, and so there was certainly the communicable disease, which they called the bug, in Black Hole, which not like gonorrhea. No, this turns you into a mutant.
you can have a little mouth on your neck that talks when you're asleep. I mean, I found a lot of the deformities were sort of interesting in and of themselves, like imagery-wise, of like, you know, one guy, Rob, who's one of the main characters, has a little mouth on him.
Which talks,
and I found it interesting because there's situations where his mouth is saying stuff that he wouldn't say, you know, when he's awake, but it's a lot of interesting allegory sort of with things that affect sort of people who are disenfranchised when they're young. You know, you have a piece of you that tells the truth even when you don't want to. You have the main girl seems to shed her skin. You know,
Chris.
Yeah, Chris. The skin just comes off like in big, you know, whole sheets.
Sure.
You know, and obviously, the imagery of brand new skin, and which it's also sort of weird because a lot of the deformities by the end aren't really deformities.
That was interesting. Is that you had some cases where, I mean, these people were going to be outcast from society no matter what they did because the mutation was so extreme. It's horns coming out of your head,
like a cat face or something. Yeah.
And then there were some people like one of the other main characters, Keith, who just had some, you know, little
tadpoles.
Tadpoles under his armpit, or you know, Liz or Eliza who had a tail. I mean, stuff that you could cover up and still exist in society.
Yeah.
But then there were people that were, you know, that they were obviously going to forever be outcast.
Which I thought was pretty interesting, because once you get to the part where they start talking about the bug, I think you believe that the story is going to go just about that, and that's what the story is going to be, but it isn't really. I mean, that's just part of it. That's sort of an identifier. It's almost like a symbolism of just like growing up. It's not... Because it doesn't take over the story overall, because most of even the horror elements of the story come from that somebody's killing some of the, you know, the people that are hiding in the woods. But it isn't necessarily all about the deformity. You know, when you find out why the, I forget what the gentleman's name, the guy with the cat face,
who's committing, Dave,
who's committing the murders, it doesn't really have to do with the bug. He's always been a lonely guy.
Yeah,
you find
yeah.
out that he... The things are wrong with him.
You could take the actual mutations and deformities out of this, and Black Hole still works.
Yeah.
These are runaway kids that are living, that are outcasts living in the woods, and then there are these other kids that are kind of living on the periphery of that, but still existing in society, but feel as much of outcasts in their lives as these people. Yeah. So, you know, this could be, you know, any kids USA. It's the deformities that add obviously a strong graphic element and really hammer the point out how outcast these kids
are.
Well,
there's also like the two sort of parallel love stories that are going on. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your Rob and Chris, which has a tragic ending to it. You know, Chris being like this very popular girl who starts seeing Rob, and he gives her the disease. The
kind
bug,
of by accident.
Kind of by accident. He thinks that she knows that he has it, but she doesn't really. So now they're both kind of in it together, and Rob ends up, you know, dead, and she's sort of abandoned, and it's sort of like the worst-case scenario. But then you have Liza
and Keith,
who sort of find each other and are okay with what happened to them.
This brings them together, and they actually... You hope, and there's definitely that foreshadowing that they're going to come out of this and they're going to be okay.
And they're okay, and the bug hasn't ruined doesn't ruin their lives.
No.
That's not it. Isn't like that.
And that was the thing about Chris, the girl who was the object of Keith's affection originally, and then he kind of grows up throughout the book, and then falls in love with Eliza, who he really finds is more of his, you know, quote unquote soulmate.
Yeah.
But Chris, she falls into the camp of having one of these mutations that she could have lived a normal life with.
She runs away for different reasons.
And I
do find that interesting in the story, is that she doesn't look like an outcast. She makes herself an outcast. She knows that she has the disease, but it doesn't affect her. You know, she just sloughs off her skin, you know, in big, mm-hmm. you know, in one whole sheet. You know,
and she kind of makes the... Now, there's some shitty things that happen to her.
Yeah.
You know, she's a young woman in love, and that ends very tragically for her. But she, for all accounts, she even talks about it later in the book, that she could go home. Her parents would welcome her back, you know, immediately, and she could go right back to her life. She just doesn't have it figured out and doesn't know if that's really what she wants. It's a thing that I think a lot of high school age people come to is whenever you're in that very thin window of approaching adulthood, yet all things from your childhood are very close in the rearview mirror, trying to figure things out of what does the future hold for me? Where can I go? Centrist antagonizing the dog.
Centrist antagonizing the dog.
I mean, whenever you're 16, 17, 18 years old, it can feel like every day is your last day, and it's never going to get any better.
It's sort of interesting because a lot of the kids that sort of run off, they live in like this, it's like a fantasy world where they live in this forest. Are they just going to live in that forest forever? You know, what's the solution? What are they going to do with their lives? Are they just going to sit there? Is that it for them?
Well, it was a very high school thing. It's like, if you are going to ferret yourself off in the woods and say, okay, I can't live in society, I have to go live in the woods, what are you going to take with you? You know, you're gonna take the right provisions, and you're gonna, you know, thinking in an adult planning way, you know, you're gonna take the right stuff. What do they take into the woods? Like Cheetos, Snicker bars, you know, potato chips, and
it's like a weird camping trip.
It's like, well, yeah, you know, that's probably what I would have taken at that
time.
Yeah,
this is my plan. I'm going to bring a bag of Cheetos with me out to the forest.
I can live on Cheetos for weeks.
Well, speaking separately just from the story, you know, it's the artwork in it is sort of like a woodcut sort of look to it, black and white. Lots of black. The book's a lot of black.
It is
with a little white in it.
It's the first thing you know. I mean, the story. Yeah. We talk about the story, and the story is very engaging. You dive into it, and you every one of these characters is fully realized in a way that you, by the end of the book, you know their motivations. You know who they are. They're little bits and pieces of you in a lot of these characters. But the art is absolutely gorgeous. It's each page is its own little masterwork, and you almost can't describe it. You have to go look at it, but it does have a very woodcut or scratchboard.
The only criticism I would have for the art is at times, especially at the beginning, it's hard to know who sometimes the characters look samey.
Yeah, if Rob didn't have the little goatee,
he'd be indistinguishable from
Keith.
Keith. And until you start to get their voices, mm-hmm. there's a little bit of confusion because the guys have long hair, the women have long hair, and a little bit at first it can be. I know the first time I read, and even the second time I read through it, the first couple I was like, "Wait, who is this? Who is this? Everyone? They're all teenagers, and they all have same length of hair, and they're all until you get the voice."
And but by the by the end of the book, that's it's really not confusing.
No, it's not confusing at all.
Yeah, the first
couple
that's
issues. That's the only thing I'd say right at the beginning is that it's pretty easy to get tripped up on. Who is who?
I think one of the very interesting things about Black Hole and the artwork is that Charles Burns released this as 12 individual issues. He did that over 10 years.
Must have been a killer to wait for that next issue to come out.
You talked to guys
are the
like,
divisions in the book? Are like the 12 issues? Are they? Because there's chapters, but the chapters are vary in length. A lot.
Yeah, so. Well, there were chapter breaks in the issues.
Yeah.
So you might get 15 pages in a chapter, and then there'll be a division there, and then you'll get, 5 or 10.
Yeah.
They may have been 30 pages, I'm not for sure. I think they were 30-page issues. So you'll get 20 pages of one chapter, and then 10 of the next. And then the next issue would go like, 10 and then 20.
What a weird way to do that.
Yeah, but it's, I think it works. It's weird, because I've read it in single issues, and I've read it as a collected, and it reads very well both ways, but I actually kind of prefer the single issue.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
I could not imagine reading this over a course of
10 years. No,
of 10 years.
but I did like reading each individual issue. It gave it a perfect amount of breath in between issues. But what's fascinating is that he did this over 10 years. And if you look at the art in issue 1 and the art in issue 12, they are pretty much identical.
Is that good or bad, though?
I think it's awesome.
Okay, it's interesting. I would wonder. I would ask him. If he, in his own art, had gotten beyond what he'd done in the first issue, but had to make a conscious effort to not...
To keep the same.
Quote-unquote
like, voice of
but the... But you got to think, if you're an artist, and you're working, you're an artist, over the course of 10 years...
You're going to change.
Your style is going to change. You're, like, what you want to do is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, perhaps, someday I will ask Charles Burns, like, if by the end he was at all interested... Like, what if he had moved on? What if he had moved on to something else?
If at year 8, were you like, oh, fuck, another issue.
I got to hammer these out. Not like that, but, like, was he doing everything else he was working on, all his other ideas, were they different significantly from this, but because he knew what else he'd done, he had to keep doing the style that he did.
You know, the first piece of Charles Burns' art that I remember seeing, and I didn't know it was Charles Burns at the time, Iggy Pop's Brick by Brick album.
Oh yeah, that's right.
He did the cover art for that, and you look at it now. It's like, oh yeah, that's Charles Burns.
It's Charles Burns,
his absolutely distinctive style. But I think it was amazing that the art stayed absolutely consistent. If you pick this up, you would
have no idea that it was over the course of 10 years.
No,
seamless.
Yeah.
It seems like it's written for to me reading it. I couldn't tell that it was divided
in single issues.
Into single issues at all.
I tell you what, if you ever have a chance, and you can probably find it at like comicbookdb.com to look at the cover art for these, absolutely gorgeous.
Is the cover art in the chapters?
No,
then the cover art is not in here.
The
son of a bitch, Charles Burns.
Not just cover, but cover and back cover.
I'm coming for you. I'm gonna get my cover and back art.
they're absolutely, absolutely gorgeous. Yeah,
you have the hardcover and I have the softcover.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that means? I'm cheaper than you.
I'm making up for something.
The softcover was out when I bought it. I think I borrowed your hardcover when I read it when we were going to do it the first time, like a year and a half ago.
What's funny is that this hardcover has now been loaned out like at least 4 or 5 times.
You always get it back.
I always do.
You always get it back.
Yeah. It was I had to scramble this week. I went over to a buddy of mine who doesn't really read comics, and I let him borrow this before he took a trip to Italy. And he read it on the plane and came back, and all he could say is, "I read it. We'll talk." So I haven't talked to him about it yet, but I asked him if he liked it.
He's gonna ask if you have emotional problems.
Probably.
Chris, is everything okay with you these days? Everything all right with you? What else has Charles Burns done sequential story-wise?
Oh, gosh. You're going to ask me that, aren't you?
Well, if you don't know, you don't know. I mean, I just... He's not a name you hear thrown about.
I think he... I believe that he does a lot of commercial stuff.
I mean, I haven't heard his name really associated with anything besides that Iggy Pop, the Iggy Pop cover art, and this. You know, like, I don't hear his name bandied about with a lot of different stuff that's out there.
Well, let me take a
look here. So I'll take a look at it.
Who's your favorite character in the book?
I liked Rob a lot.
Okay. He's obviously a pretty tragic character.
Yes.
And he's a lot like a lot of, you know, a lot of high school guys.
Doesn't know what he wants. Doesn't... Takes everything real serious. Sort of. His flippancy in certain things leads to him to being very serious about getting committed to things that maybe are outside of his depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like his deformity the best. I think it's the best one, with the little mouth that talks when he's sleeping.
Yeah,
you know,
his like subconscious is... Isn't that a nightmare for everyone?
Yeah,
is to have another mouth on your body that
you don't control,
admits the truth.
Yeah, yeah, that just talks when you don't want it to. You know.
And there's also... It's almost like there was a precognitive ability to the mouth that, yeah, there was
knew
a couple
something bad was going to happen.
It knew something was wrong, and I think that Rob, in his subconscious, as he and Chris have kind of relocated to the woods, and there's
sort of Blair Witch dolls hanging.
Yeah.
Now, did that that must have predated Blair Witch?
I believe so.
Interesting. I would always wonder if they got that idea, or if that's just something that's around. Well, the little dolls made out of, like, shit that are hanging in the
forest.
Well,
they do that in the Pacific Northwest.
Is that a Pacific Northwest thing? Is that a Seattle? I thought kilts were a Seattle thing. I had no idea that creepy dolls.
Charles Burns has worked as the penciler on Big Baby, Black Hole, Brain Dead, The Mammoth Book of Best Crime Comics, McSweeney's Quarterly Concern.
Oh, all these highbrow.
Raw.
Has he done anything lowbrow that
Taboo,
I might enjoy? Hard Hat books? Books for the hard hat crowd, Chris.
I don't think so.
For the slobs.
Yeah, it's comicbookdb.com. You can go and check out a lot of that stuff. I obviously liked Keith. I think he fit my personality quite a bit. He was the kid that really means well. Was very much a people pleaser and wanting to do the nice thing to get the girl and to kind of make his way through life. And I think that he, through the course of the book, kind of wakes up to reality and sees his own value and own worth, and that it's not necessarily tied into how people view him or think of him.
Yeah.
You know, he has this thing where repeatedly talks about he's the one who always wants to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, he's never really happy where he is until the end, where he's like, everything's going to be okay. And he seems very content in the moment for the very first
time.
I'm
never going to let you house sit for me then, if Keith. Because you're just going to allow a bunch of derelict, creepy kids to move into my place, and they're all going to get shot.
Keith is the worst house sitter ever. Not good.
Man, I forget who said this, but a pussy done got you killed. I believe that's in the extras to the Scarface movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's after all of him wanting to be with Chris for that short period gets him in all that sort of trouble, but also pushes him to run off with Eliza. So, you know, it works out.
And I think Eliza is another fascinating character, that you get just enough of her in the book that she's very endearing, and she just borders on almost pathetic at a couple times, but it becomes very redeemed in the end. And it was, I think, as you look back on it, was kind of constantly looking for someone to help take care of her a little bit, not in a woe is me, I'm you know, very meek sort of way, but she needed someone.
She was the fit for Keith.
Yeah. She helped make Keith feel like he had worth.
Well, Chris didn't never wanted Keith's help.
No,
sort of. Yeah, she didn't want anyone's help
unless he was convenient.
Yeah, you know, and that was the...
Not that any of us have ever been in that fucking situation.
God, tell me about it, man. That tiny mouth of mine. Mm-hmm. Can't shut up.
Who do you think the hero of the book is? Or the if you were to pick a protagonist of Black Hole?
Probably Keith.
Think so?
I think it's Keith.
I waver on that. I want to think it's Keith, but in a lot of ways, I think it's Chris.
But I don't leave the book liking Chris.
I'm on the fence on that. I want to like her, and I think that she may be starting to get to. It leaves it very open-ended as to how her story ends.
Yeah.
But I want to. I still want her to end up okay, and I hope that she's maybe learned from what's happened.
Yeah.
And you can see her. She's sitting on the edge of maybe going back and being a part of the world again, but she's just not quite ready. And so I was rooting for her. I hope that she comes out of the ocean at the end and goes to have dinner with the people on the beach and then goes back home, you know.
She's so weak.
She is very weak.
In that she, everything sort of falls apart around her for no reason other than that she just lets it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no reason why she really had to run away. I mean, other than the fact that she really liked Rob. Let her whole world fall apart
around her.
Because
of him, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's part of you that thinks that even if she and Rob had run off and been, quote-unquote, okay for a while, it wouldn't have ended
It doesn't
well.
Make any sense, because it's such a weak relationship, because she puts herself in a position where she depends completely on Rob. And when he dies,
she falls apart.
She almost dies herself.
Actually, I just noticed we have some comments.
What? That's a fantasy football draft list you have there.
under the ESPN Top 200.
Weird.
I'm drafting fifth in my league this
Weird.
Year. Very happy. All right.
Six-team league.
If you would like to become a part of our book club, you can go to aroundcomics.com. We have
$20.
Send us $20. We can, we have a book club sub forum where we discuss and talk about the books. I'm going to get a little bit more involved in that this next go around. I've been slacking, Tom.
You're weak. You're weak. Chris is weak is the theme.
Chris is reading great.
Chris in the book.
All right. This comes from Sunnyvale Trash.
He likes to talk.
Yes.
He likes to talk.
He bullet pointed, though.
Oh, that's
this
classy.
Is good. All right. Finished reading this yesterday.
Did he cross post it from the Black Hole Forum?
Maybe. It's a fantastic book, and he bullet points his thoughts on the art. Expressive characters.
Number one.
Tons of reoccurring symbols and images to reinforce the themes in the book, which is absolutely
penises
correct.
And vaginas.
Cuts.
Look like vaginas.
Bones. I've never seen so many vagina-shaped objects in my life. Yeah. Excellent use of surreal, dreamlike moments.
Yeah.
There was, talking about surreal and dreamlike, there was an entire issue dedicated to an acid trip. Which, on top of all of the mutations and craziness going on, just
I've had that trip, man. I had a trip once where an elf asked me for a cigarette. His face was in a tree. Crazy.
Even though there was a fairly large cast, I had no trouble telling them apart. Water often looked like blood, and there are some scenes in bathtubs that are hard to just.
You do think people have killed themselves a lot. There's a lot of scenes where you walk into people in dark bathtubs.
That woman's dead.
She's dead. Oh, wait, no.
Go away. So the writing was realistic. Dialogue definitely had a very teenage voice to it. And I felt like these were teenagers that were talking. It fit.
They used a lot of lingo.
Yeah.
They talked about these weren't
35 or 40 year old voices coming out of teenage, you know,
which
drawings.
Makes me suspicious about Charles Burns.
Spent a lot of time with teenagers.
Over the course of 10 years.
Resonant conclusions to each plot line, even though they weren't necessarily definitive endings. Yeah, they were both endings were kind of open ended, but that's life.
Write your own final chapter.
Your opening for fan fiction.
Yep.
A wide array of emotions on display, very dynamic. Palpable sense of alienation, disappointment, happiness, confusion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Alpha Fright writes in and.
Check out my webcam.
It was an engaging eye-opener. It's rare that I'll read something and be intrigued by it. And those vag symbols were a great illusion of mental puberty so twisted you can only turn to the next page and read on.
It's Mike Norton's eating a foot-long sub, and every time he hears vagina...
It's rare to see the book a book like this where the art and the writing combine to twist the format of panel layout, which is absolutely dead on.
It makes me wonder if I'm the only person that had a good high school experience.
You know, I think it's filled with good and bad. I think that is high school. It's it hopefully is filled with good and bad and learning experiences.
Besides when I lived in the forest. Like sure. The kids in the book did.
Well, you know, talking about the forest, I was thinking about how important location was to this. This is set in suburban Seattle. And, you know, Seattle is very wet and rainy. It's very forested and green and lush.
Men wear kilts.
And it's also very close to the ocean. And all of those elements play very heavily into...
The one thing I really liked about location, though, is it really captures when you're a teenager. Before you can get into a bar, when you want to do, like illegal shit, you have to go weird places like parks or, like, forests. Yep. Places you would never go as soon as you are 20. Like, if you wanted... I remember drinking in,
like, case
an
where are you going?
Silo.
Yeah.
Like, in the middle of nowhere. Like, something you would have to pay me to do now.
Hey,
like,
man, we used to drink in a strip mine.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, I grew up in southern Illinois. We got a lot of strip mines.
Did anyone ever die in the mines?
No. No.
You just said, he winked at me when he said that.
Urban myth. Yeah, no one that we knew.
Hey, Chris, no one died down. Yeah, no one died down there. Wink.
No one died. Many were killed, though.
How many people did you kill in those mines?
None. My name is not Dave.
How many people did you not save from dying? I'm trying to find the right question to get the truth here, Chris.
No, but yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I used to drink in woods and strip mines. And
we used to drink on a frolfing course.
A what?
Frisbee golf. It was on high school. It was this place, Baird's Creek, that had a giant hill that kids would slide down. But in the summer... You drive your car into the forest, you climb up on the hill, and you could drink. And if the cops came, you had enough time to
run, hightail it.
To run. And one night, I let let one of my friends drive my car because he was going to go meet up with this girl. And then the cops came, and everyone scrambled, and I had nowhere to go. So I sat in the forest by myself for 2.5 hours.
Do you have anything to read?
No. It was too dark. I just sat, like... Thinking, oh shit, oh shit, I'm mugging you.
Is that a flashlight?
Is that a flashlight? It's a cop.
So, final thought, overall impression, would you suggest this to somebody that hasn't read a comic before?
I have two suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very good, and I think anybody would enjoy it. And number two, if you're a teenager and you need to drink, find somebody who has quote-unquote cool parents. Don't go into the forest. Don't run away to, like, have your fun. If you have a cat face, you know, just get over it.
Yeah. And whenever you're about ready to have sex with someone and you say, I know.
Never say I know because they're trying to tell you something fucked up. And don't go, no.
Make sure that everything is out on the table.
Yes.
Otherwise, you may be peeling your skin off.
I know. What? I have a tiny mouth on my chest. I know. How do you know?
So, all right. Loved it.
What strip mine did you kill all those people in?
I didn't kill anyone.
What strip mine did you drink at? Wink, wink, yeah. FBI, go to the strip mine.
It was an old Ben Coal Company. It was off Route 13.
All right.
Yep, there you go.
FBI, that's right.
send out the sniffing dogs now.
I'm going to be calling the Southern Illinois Police to go check out this mine.
I pulled all the teeth.
Oh, God. There aren't going to be any hands or feet. Just a bunch of torsos in that mine.
Yeah, no hands, feet, or heads. This book has messed with all of us.
Yeah.
All right, shall we announce our next book club selection?
Do it, Captain.
This month, or the next 6 weeks, whatever it takes us, and you can pick this up at InStockTrades.com, is Tom B. Land's True Story, Swear to God, Archive, Volume 1.
I imagine that we won't go on a tangent when we talk about this one, about you killing people in my strip mine.
I hope not
for his sake. Man, if his love story involves a strip mine or
weird shit happens in Puerto Rico, man.
What if him and his wife got together because they killed somebody in a strip mine?
Hey, we're going to find out.
Yeah. This is true. We're all going to find this out together,
yep.
Everyone.
This is a true story, swear to God. And it is exactly what it says it is. It's Tom B. Land's true life story, and it's a life story. It's a love story. I've heard great things about it. Have not read it, so we're going to be finding out about this with everyone else. You can pick that up in stock trades. They've got it for 47% off the cover price, so you can pick it up for a minuscule $10.59.
One of those great... Image essentials, pretty
yes.
much. The black and white image
yeah.
phone books.
Yeah, sure. But, well, it is a... And we didn't just stumble on this one. It is a 6-time Eisner-nominated series.
Yes.
So it is critically acclaimed, and I am really looking forward to digging
so
into
I.
it. So
All right, then.
So there you go. We'll be back in a month or 6 weeks with that. Go to the forum.
Yep.
We're going to have a discussion group about it. Hope you enjoy it. And until next time, this has been the Around Comics Book Club episode. Come back on Monday for a regular full-length Around Comics
yeah.
episode.
Yeah.
Rawr.
Yeah, right. You're going to get this.
Thanks, folks.
Hanging round the ceiling half the time. Hanging round the ceiling half the time.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.